Welcome to WebEx, practical web accessibility tips. Hello and welcome to WebEx, podcast number 70. Lots of news and events. This is your host, Dennis.
And I'm Ross.
Hello, Ross.
How's it going, Dennis?
Pretty good. It's getting, I think it's spring now.
Yeah, I think so for us, too. It's funny, we had one weekend that was, like, super warm, like 70 degrees, and, you know, went out and grilled that weekend, and then 2 days later, it snowed, like, 6 inches.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's Michigan weather for you, right?
Right. Yeah. The typical tease.
So, yeah, I think we're past that. I think the rain's finally pretty much gone here in Northern California. It's been like really sunny and pretty warm today and tomorrow.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
You gonna go out and enjoy it? Do anything like that?
Yeah. Yesterday, my forehead got sunburned at the we were out in Oakland at this children's fairyland like place.
Very cool.
Yeah, I met a friend, my ex manager, and his family. So it was good. It's all good.
Very cool. And you could probably get your motorcycle out soon, too, right?
Yeah, I haven't been riding it much, but I hope to take a ride today. Especially since I've been carpooling, you know, to from Cupertino to Redwood City. I've been driving it less, so. Okay, enough about personal stuff. So I think I put a post about this, a brief post about this, but our RSS subscribers have been growing pretty well lately, and this past week we went over 2,000. WebEx has gone over 2,000 subscribers to the RSS feed, so that was really cool to hear.
Yeah, it's great. Thanks everybody for subscribing.
Definitely.
We might have to do a what would you call it? A rally for more subscribers sometime. Yes, very nice. You can pull an Ashton Kutcher and try and get a million in 3 days.
Or yeah, right. Well, I did kind of a soft launch of the Twitter account. You could follow the WebEx feed on Twitter, just WebEx, WebAxe is the username. So it's just, maybe one or average maybe one post a day, you know, on something about web accessibility, and then of course all the blog and podcast posts will be updated on the Twitter account. So
very cool. Is it posted through accessible Twitter?
Of course.
Yeah. There we go.
And speaking of accessible Twitter, I'm getting there's almost 300 followers now on the accessible Twitter account, so that's cool. That keeps growing slowly. And, over the last few weeks, I've made lots of updates. So if you haven't checked it out, go check it out, accessibletwitter.com, or let anybody know about that site that you feel could make good use of that site. As we all know, Twitter has some major accessibility issues.
Yes.
Yeah, so last week I added a basic search functionality to it, so that was cool. And I put in some accessible Ajax for favoriting and unfavoriting tweets.
Very cool.
Are you typing all this down?
No, I'm trying to get to it because I want to see.
I can hear your keys. That's funny.
Yeah, I'm using a new mic, everybody, so apparently it picks up a lot more than the last one.
Yeah, Ross had to close his window because I could hear the cars going by.
So I'll keep my noise to a minimum.
So something else cool that was added was the audio cues when entering a tweet or ear cons. So so when you get down to like 30, 15, or 5 characters left, there's an audio message that will tell you.
That's very cool. I mean, how did you end up doing that programming-wise?
Well, I had that idea, when I first started out. The only thing bad, or not bad, but that could be better, I think, about accessible Twitter is I haven't implemented Aria yet. I'm still lacking, actually, a little bit on that technology. But I'll get to it this year. The accessible Ajax and the audio cues don't use Aria, which is on the list of things to do. But the technology I use for that is just kind of a combination of Flash and JavaScript. So you obviously need those for it to work. But everything is, you know, progressive enhancement and everything. So it's pretty nice. I got some good feedback on that. And as long as the API keeps working fairly well, then the site is, I think a hell of a lot better than Twitter.com. So.
Yeah, I agree.
And just a side note, with OpenAuth, I got a couple requests to implement open authentication, which means the user actually would switch over to the Twitter account and you're actually on Twitter.com and allow access to a third-party website. So it's that way it's safer. You don't have to put your username and password into the third-party site. So I have that pretty much developed, but, you know, like many things, it's not working that great as far as on Twitter's side. Like, it's still in, they're calling it in beta status, Twitter's open off, and it's just, it's kind of inconsistent. So I'll check up on that soon and see if it's working any better, and then I'll implement that.
I seem to notice a trend with Twitter's API and problems.
Yeah. There's a lot of Twittering about it too, which is kind of ironic.
Yeah.
Moving on. Just I wanted to mention that my freelance company, I changed the name of it. Previously Check Engine USA. Usability standards and accessibility is now, well, kind of website tune-ups and overhauls. The name of it now is just Web Overhauls.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, short, plain, and simple. And I really like that. And
So what kind of inspired you to make that change?
Well, I've been itching to change the name just because it's the name itself is misleading, you know, and it's not good for SEO either, but, you know, unless you read the subtitle, website tune-ups and overhauls, you think it sounds like an auto mechanic or something.
You ever have someone call you and say, I need an oil change?
Yeah, I have actually.
Really?
One time I did. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty funny. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I still have the theme web overhauls, you know,
But
it's much more clear and simple and therefore more accessible, right?
Yeah, quite liked it.
Yeah.
It's cognitively friendly, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
It sounds like we got a phone call from a WebEx listener regarding our recovery.gov.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
I didn't actually hear this.
Thanks for reminding me. Yeah, like a couple... I think it might have even been the day after we posted the last podcast when we reviewed the recovery.gov website. I actually got a phone call on my personal mobile phone from a gentleman, basically congratulating me on posting that podcast. And apparently he thought it was a little gutsy to do that.
Huh.
But I guess he works in the government or with Section 508 or something. So, you know, it sounded like he was pretty, you know, frustrated that, you know, the site lacked so much accessibility and he said he was glad that, to see the podcast and stuff. That was a very interesting phone call.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
It was pretty neat. Yeah. So thanks.
Yeah. And no people in black cars or black suits have come to take us away. So.
if we hear any funny beeps and clicks on this during this podcast, then we maybe it's the federal government.
Yeah, they have tapped into Skype, making sure that we don't undermine their websites.
I hear eBay selling Skype.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the word. Huh. So we'll see what happens to our podcasting application.
Huh, I wonder who would buy it. Maybe Google.
Yeah.
They buy everything.
Why not, right? Yeah.
Right.
So,
yeah, billions.
So what's up with what's going on with Refresh Detroit?
Refresh Detroit has been going good. So those who don't know, Refresh Detroit is part of the Refreshing Cities movement, where different cities can start their own Refresh chapter, and it's just basically you meet and spread accessibility and standards and usability and all that good stuff. So we have one for Detroit that Dennis and I started. Last month, we had Noel Jackson, who works for Automattic, which is the company that makes WordPress. And he talked about transitioning from print design into web design and the different things that you need to think about. Really interesting points. You know, he talked about how with print, you've kind of got like fixed amount of content that can go on a single page, where the web, in theory, you have an infinite amount, and how that changes and you know, resolution differences and different context and kind of more than your typical sort of discussion about print to web and about, you know, oh, it's monitor versus paper sort of basic. So it was really good.
Cool. Sounds interesting.
Yeah. And then Tuesday, anybody who would like to come, we are going to be having a panel for discussing how to write on the web. And that should be great. And that's going to be at Wayne State University.
Cool. Down in Detroit.
Yep.
And that's April 21st, then, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so today's Sunday, so I better get this podcast up tonight or tomorrow.
No pressure.
Okay, good. Let's move on to the news.
Sounds good. So the first item we have today is there's a petition out there to make the Kindle 2, the Amazon book reader, fully accessible.
Yeah, and actually, I signed it under the WebAx name, so it's petition number 713. So that's approximately how many there are right now. So sounds like they could use a few more. So it's on petitiononline.com, and of course we'll post a link, but if you're not familiar with what Kindle is, and I wasn't really too familiar with it, but basically it's this device that you could purchase for like about $300 American, and you could read books. Like, you could download the software from Amazon and like read like 200. Well, I'm not sure how many you could actually read on this device, but the petition says they have over 230,000 publications, so that's why they need to make Kindle accessible, because, you know, they're obviously a major you know, retailer in the United States and the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like a digital screen, and then you download books from Amazon. It's like an ebook reader almost.
Yeah.
I thought the petition was well written, because they do kind of like acknowledge that, you know, Amazon has gone a long way to make their website accessible, and listen to, you know, the feedback of the accessible community and that sort of thing. And it seems like it'd be such an easy thing to do at this point, you know, to just kind of get some screen reader software in there.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully they will take that on next. So check out the petition, and if you'd like, go ahead and give your digital signature. Okay, next, I just want to mention this article I thought was interesting, an open letter to game developers. And it's basically asking game developers to make gaming more accessible. So that's pretty interesting. You know, I mean, web accessibility is getting pretty big now, and gaming is so huge now that you think this issue, I guess, naturally would come up one time or another.
Yeah.
But they write, game accessibility. It's a loaded phrase, and I know that it scares the hell out of many developers. Which is probably very true. But.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting concept, and that, you know, a long time ago had read a story about somebody who had motor disabilities and would still like to play games, and how that limited what they could do, what games they could play. But
yeah,
it makes sense. I mean, especially with certain games, everybody should be able to have access to that sort of enjoyment and entertainment.
Definitely. All right, so next news item, the JODY Awards for Excellence in Accessible Cultural Websites and Digital Media. So this is a site or page I came across from, I guess, 24hourmuseum.org.uk. And basically it's, you know, just as it sounds, I guess, rewards rewarding people with really nice, accessible websites. And yeah, I thought it had an interesting background to it. It says the award is named in memory of Jody Motz, I think it's how you pronounce it. I guess who passed away in 2001, who worked as part of the British Museum's web team and later at the RNIB. The awards honor Jody's efforts to ensure the British Museum's Compass website was as accessible as possible. So, yeah, so great site. Cheers for the effort and in doing that. But there is one issue I just had to mention.
Oh.
And that is, if you go to the bottom of this article, there's it says you could download the awards criteria, the press release, the keynote speech. So my first issue is that, you know, it's not available in web format, text specifically. And with the point B being that it's not available in PDF either, which totally surprised me. I'm like taking a double, triple take at it. They're linking to Word files. And so, you know, if you don't have Microsoft Word, then it's probably not going to be accessible. Well, although I really like, you know, I guess you could always download OpenOffice, right?
Yeah, but
linking, but linking to Word files obviously breaks the rules, right?
Right.
Well, on top of that, I was disappointed because I opened one of the Word files, and I noticed that the headings don't use headings, you know, heading styles, and the one image in there didn't have any alternative text. So, if they're listening, please, maybe you could fix that.
Yeah, small things that go a long way.
Exactly, exactly.
Especially when you're talking about awards for accessibility.
Exactly. 9 reasons why accessibility matters. That's a good segue, I guess, into this news item.
Yeah, I like this article. It's kind of
it's awesome.
Yeah, like I almost want to print it out and just anytime somebody says, you know, does this
totally
to do this, I can just say, okay,
totally
read through this and then tell me.
Actually, I was just thinking that this morning, putting some of these points or stats into like a presentation or something. But yeah, so this is DougLast.com. Thoughts on design, 9 reasons why accessibility matters. These are great, great stats just for that. It's just a short blog with 9 bullet points, and they're just excellent, you know. So go ahead and check that out. I'll read off a couple of them. Number one, 12.8% of adults, 21 to 64, are disabled in some way.
That seems like a lot more than you might think.
Well, I've heard 10%, which is pretty believable, you know, as far as like, you know, color blindness and some kind of motor impairment or hearing impairment.
Right, or even ADD and how that might, you know, affect how you could use a website.
And he has, he's citing resources here and links and stuff, so, which is obviously makes it much, much more, you know, believable. So, yeah, so that was just a great one to start off. 8 to 12% of males in Europe have a color deficiency. 5.5 million people have obstructed vision because of cataracts. Does that mean the United States only? I don't know. The stat comes from the United States, so. Worldwide, 42 million people are blind. Oh, this is a good one, because this reminds me of my, my wife's grandfather. Only 1 out of 5 people who could benefit from a hearing aid actually wear one. And the next two are very, very relevant. 5% of people have JavaScript turned off. And I know so many people would not even believe that, but if you go to W3 schools and look at their stats, that's what it says.
Yeah. That's still a good amount of people.
Yeah, it is.
You should be paying attention to hijacks and progress enhancement and all that.
Totally. And then this is another good one, although everybody still has denial. But developers. IE6, Internet Explorer 6, still has 17% browser share.
Oh, it just won't go away.
Not anytime soon. Maybe next year.
Yeah. Have you seen, there's this link that I found, I want to say just yesterday, called IE6update.com, and it's a little snippet of code.
Yeah, I did, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You put it on your website. I guess I don't know how I completely feel about it.
Yeah.
I think it's all right.
It's a great idea. I'm just not so sure I'd actually put it on my own website.
I wouldn't, and, well, I'll explain what it is, and I'll kind of explain why.
Okay.
So for those listening who haven't seen it, you put a little snippet of code on your website, and it creates a little bar at the top that almost looks like, you know, an IE6, like, notification bar. And it says that your browser doesn't support some features that this website, you know, incorporates. You should really upgrade, something like that.
Doesn't the code invoke that to come up in IE6? Or does the code actually create that? I thought it invoked it on the IE6.
It might be. I kind of looked at the screenshots, but didn't dive deeper.
But if anyone out there knows more than us, then please comment.
Yeah. But my problem with it is you may be suggesting that somebody upgrade it, and they may upgrade it, and then all of a sudden their browser's different, and then they have trouble using the web.
Yeah, or they might feel offended that, you know, you're suggesting that, or that your website can't be used by their computer, you know, be like, what's wrong? This isn't accessible if I can't even, you know, if this website can't be viewed on my IE6 browser.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a gray area, I suppose.
Yeah. I could see situations where it might work out okay, but just to kind of give that to everybody who has IE6 seems a little iffy.
It's a very good, very sneaky technique.
Yeah.
Very clever technique. Sorry, let me put it that way. Okay, next news bit. 10 accessibility tips for RSS feeds. Now, somebody Twittered this, so I retweeted it, and then I found out that, somebody Twittered back or, you know, responded or whatever and said that this article sucks. And I was like, oh. So the reason I kept it in this podcast is because, I don't know, it's just I wanted to mention that. So apologies if you actually read it and then, like, you know, didn't get anything out of it. But it does have... The reason the article isn't very good is because, I mean, the 10 tips they give are just basically web accessibility tips. So they're still valid tips, so for web accessibility. So, you know, if you're on the beginning level, then go ahead and read it. But if you're past the beginner level, then just ignore that link. But, yeah, so there are 10 basic tips. And like I said, they're valid, but they're not really... I don't really know how they have anything specifically to do with RSS, so
kind of almost, if you're being creating an accessible document that gets syndicated, it'll be accessible anyway, sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. Maybe the article comes from like this RSS, speedrssreader.com. So maybe they, you know, obviously they're not too up on web accessibility, I don't think, and maybe they're just, maybe the, you know, their heart's in the right place.
Yeah. Just cheers for trying.
Yes. So, anyways, so that's that. Okay. There's a new post from our friends at 456 Berea Street, Ways to Understand AT, Assistive Technology. And this is basically in response to the link and article going around. I think I posted this on WebEx. Accessibility to the Face, which was a personal article about why accessibility is important. And this article, Making Accessibility More Real, is kind of in response to that. It's just a brief blog post, but some Roger Johansson posts several techniques to help understand disabilities and to go through a website using different methods, you know, to help understand like why it's good to have web accessibility. And basically these methods, you know, it's good also for like testing your site, you know, for web accessibility. So he suggests things like, you know, unplug your mouse and only use the keyboard. Let's see, turn off your monitor and try to use the site with just a screen reader. And sit as far, this one's funny, sit as far away as you can from your screen.
Yeah, so I kind of get the idea. I can't read very well.
Kind of mimic some kind of visual impairment, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought they were kind of a lot of very clever, easy to use or easy to do sort of techniques.
Another good one, and I think I mentioned this a while back about Paul Boag.
Wearing gloves.
Yeah, he put on like some big winter mittens or something, and then you know, tried to type or use his mouse with that. I thought that was funny. Oh, yeah, and he put on, he doesn't wear glasses or something. What was it? He put on, like, you know, really thick, like, blurry glasses or something. Like, glasses that made his vision really blurry. And, like, tried making the text bigger and seeing if he could still read the site or something.
Yeah, I think they're kind of, you know, very nice grassroots sort of approaches to do your own testing, because you can't always get, you know, accessibility lab and do testing for every project. So
right.
I can imagine using big gloves and you kind of really get the feeling of not being able to use the tools like you're used to.
Yeah. So, so check that one out. Talking about going back to, you know, accessible Twitter and accessible Web 2.0 like type social applications. There's a week and a half ago, there was a headline: Facebook commits to making social networking more accessible for visually challenged users. So apparently they're working with the AFB, American Foundation for the Blind, to hopefully make Facebook more web accessible, because, you know, I think they're falling behind on that.
Yeah, it seems they seem to be adding more Ajax and stuff like that quicker than they are adding any accessibility features. Like every time they do a design revision, it gets, you know, more fancy effects and less.
And I've actually had contact with a user of accessible Twitter who's blind, and he said that that Facebook is just even worse than Twitter as far as, like, you know, when using a screen reader.
Wow.
So I can imagine, because I mean Facebook just has a lot more to it, you know.
Yeah.
And man, I could see how you could really get lost in there.
Yeah.
Yikes, I get lost. And I'm like, and I'm a sighted user.
Yeah.
So
they definitely have some challenges ahead.
Yes, so we'll see what happens. And YouTube, they're coming along, and they have recently launched a caption editor tool called CaptionTube.
And weren't we just talking about YouTube and captions not too long ago?
Yeah, there was,
I want to say there was a third party.
Yeah, you could add captions to YouTube videos, but this is actually a captioning tool. So you could create the times. You type in the text, and you actually create the times, and then it generates files for you. So before, you could add captioning, but you had to have the caption file.
Gotcha.
So this CaptionTube application, you could actually create the captioning file, and you enter in, like I said, you play the video, and then you enter in the captioning text with the times and stuff. It's pretty slick.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty big step forward for YouTube.
Yeah.
Because that always has kind of been a major problem. And of course, their markup isn't terribly accessible, but, one thing at a time, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah, I highly doubt the editor itself is accessible, but that's a whole nother level, because, but I have to say, the application does look very promising, so that's one big...
Have you tried it yet?
Good step. I messed with it a little bit. I didn't actually generate any files, but it seems pretty intuitive and easy to use, so, for the most part.
Well, thank you, YouTube. Way to go.
Yeah. All that money Google's making, see, is showing up in all kinds of places.
Yeah, being used for good isn't one of their. They've got like two things that they go by, and one of them's like, "Don't be evil." So I guess this is their way of not being evil.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, it's like. Give people access to content information is like number one. Number two is like, don't be evil.
Well, that's a good rule for a huge corporation to follow.
Right. I don't know how many people believe it, but sure.
Okay, last news item, WASP Interact Curriculum.
This was discussed on Boag World recently, and a couple other places, but I thought worth bringing up because it's important that these sorts of important front end and I guess back end too and all sorts of development standards and accessibility get spread and taught, and it's not really being done right now through schools. So the WASP group is now creating kind of curriculum that the idea is schools could just kind of pick up the pieces that they want to and plug them into their curriculum versus trying to create their own, which is very difficult. So
When I first looked at the site, I was kind of trying to put my finger on exactly what it is. I guess what it is basically is just, coursework or classes or curriculum on, standards-based web development.
Yeah.
Pretty much, is the goal. Yeah. And there's a forum and some testimonials, and they have some links under inspiration. I haven't dove into it a lot, but looks like very, very useful and excellent curriculum. They have web design, Web Design 1 and 2, they have a module about accessibility, DOM scripting 1, findability, like SEO.
So they kind of give you a framework, and then I guess, whether it's each teacher or each department can kind of put it all together. But it has, you know, recommended reading and books and, you know, what you should talk about, assignments, exam questions, et cetera. So kind of having had to semi-create a curriculum a couple of times now that I've started teaching, I kind of appreciate these sorts of frameworks, because despite knowing all these things, once you have to decide to teach it, that's a kind of a whole a whole new monster.
Yeah. And if you're not familiar with WASP, they're the you go to webstandards.org. It's the Web Standards Project is what WASP stands for. That's what it stands for, right?
Yep.
Yeah, they describe themselves as a grassroots coalition fighting for standards which ensure simple, affordable access to web technologies for all. So yeah, if you're not familiar with them, definitely go check that group out, because they're pretty much one of the main contributors and pushers for web standards.
Yeah. It'd be great if, you know, they taught this stuff more regularly out of schools and universities.
Yeah, and that's an excellent resource now. So WASP Interact. It's interact.webstandards.org. So, and then, yes, so check it out. Okay. So, lots of news. When I said lots of news, I wasn't joking. And there was even another item that I had on the list that I've moved, that I'm going to make actually just a separate blog post later on. So we can now move on to events and conferences.
Yep. Sounds like there's a lot kind of going on.
Okay, so
accessibility.
Yeah, we talked about Refresh Detroit. Tuesday. And then a couple of weeks ago, I attended the Web 2.0 Expo in downtown San Francisco.
Ah, how was that?
Very good. Very good. It was an excellent week. I had worked Monday. I took Tuesday off and took the family up to San Francisco to a hotel. And, you know, I'm in Cupertino. It's only an hour away, but I thought it'd be fun. And,
yeah.
And it was. And, you know, we stayed just a few blocks away from the expo, the Moscone Center. It was real nice. And the, so the conference, well, Tuesday was, like workshops, but I didn't go. So, I took vacation. And then I attended Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Yeah, and it was really good. You know, there was all different kinds of topics. There was, I don't know, several thousand people, man. It was a big conference.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a pretty major conference, you know, all the, you know, Adobe was a big sponsor, and O'Reilly Books, I think, was the main company that put it on. In like, let's see, eBay, and everybody was there. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So was it kind of tech focused or business focused?
It was focused on all different things, but it was more, you know, slightly more towards tech.
Okay.
There was one, I mean, obviously the ones I went to were more techie. But yeah, it was a little bit about, marketing and, some marketing business stuff, but then, just, there was a lot about, mobile, you know, obviously about, I don't know, just mobile and social networking, which are obviously the big two hot growing fields, right, and topics.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was cool. There was even actually, and I met, it's a long story, so I'll try to make it brief, but there was one session purely on Twitter and using Twitter for your business. And to make a long story short, she ended up, I contacted the presenter, and I ended up talking on the phone with her. She's writing a book about Twitter with O'Reilly, and she's going to be mentioning accessible Twitter in the book.
Oh, very cool. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. So that was pretty cool. And Sarah M., I think, is her Twitter name, if you want to check her out. But the conference. So it was good. I put a personal post up. well, you know, on my personal blog about the conference with some bullet points on some little tidbits that I picked up and stuff. So it was pretty cool. In a couple pictures, you know, I had to twit pick a few pictures when I was there. Yeah, so there was a lot of talk about geolocation and incorporating that now that, you know, that's more available and mobile's so big. And
yeah, especially with the iPhone, which has kind of GPS.
Yeah. Well, there's actually the W3C has a geolocation API.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's pretty much like it's standard. And, you know, I mean, most of the mobile devices nowadays have some kind of support for it. And, I mean, so right. This is a big thing you need to website owners or mobile application owners need to definitely consider and look into. Yeah, and so the social media, and there was actually a fair amount of talk on HTML5 and talking about, you know, I guess if you're not familiar with it, maybe starting to get familiar with it. And Google even wrote this this awesome web HTML web app that that looks and runs great on like the iPhone and the Android. So that seems like it might be a good avenue to take as far as writing for one web app for all devices and web. And yeah, those was good stuff.
Yeah, sounds like a good conference.
Yeah,
when you hear Web 2.0, it's like you never know what you're going to get. But
yeah,
it turned out pretty well.
Yeah, you know, I met a couple people. And
yeah, I just got your name put in a book. No big deal.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, with the conference though, a couple things kind of sucked. It's like the internet connection, like in the conference rooms, was pretty good, but if you go out like we're in like the power up areas and like and stuff outside the conference rooms, like the internet connection was like very intermittent and down a lot of the time, and nobody was like outwardly like expressing themselves, but everybody was tweeting about it and saying how crappy that was and stuff. But
yeah, kind of ironic.
Yeah, it was very.
No, I still not be able to get on the web.
totally. By Friday, they pretty much had it fixed, though. On Friday, it was pretty good, but the damage was already done.
Yeah.
I can't.
It's hard to put on conferences, I guess.
Yeah. So, anyways, okay. A few more conferences to talk about. The Further Ahead. And Featherstone. Let's see. I'm at a loss now.
Yeah, the Ajax Accessibility Workshop is coming up.
Yeah. June 15th, here it is. In Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. Derek. Okay, that's what I was trying to think of. It's Derek Featherstone. Duh. He's Canadian, right? And so I think he's given this presentation before. It looks really good. I wish I could go, but I can't. It's called Real World Accessibility for Ajax and Web Apps, Ottawa, Canada, June 15th. So if you can make it, I highly suggest it. It's $500, and let's see. Includes snacks, lunch, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so Derek Featherstone, if you're not familiar with his work, check it out. He's a world leader in web accessibility. And yeah, this presentation looks really good.
Yeah, and there looks like there's a promo code to get $100 off.
Oh, yeah? What
promo
is
code
is
FA
it?
Twitter.
What is it?
FA Twitter.
Oh.
It's in your notes here.
Oh, it is? Oh, okay. I'm not... Thanks.
So if it doesn't work, don't blame me. I just read it.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Okay. I wasn't looking at my notes. I was looking at his website.
Ah.
It's a very nice webpage. with a big Canadian maple leaf thing on there. I like Canada. So friends to the north.
Yeah. They have some nice things going on up there. Always wanted to make it to the Web Directions North, which they always, it seems like they always have in Vancouver.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We should meet there sometime.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
We got a couple conferences we need to vacation and hang out in.
Yeah. I think they should just start sponsoring us, you know, send us there so that we can do a podcast about it.
I guess
it's totally worth their money.
It wouldn't hurt to ask.
Yeah.
Okay, Access U 2009 conference. This is the John Slayton Access U conference, May 11th, and Monday, May 11th, Tuesday, May 12th. Let's see. What else can I say about it? It's put on by the St. Edward's University in Austin, Texas.
Yeah. There's some kind of well-known people presenting, looks like. Molly Holschwag.
Yeah, that's right.
Derek Featherstone again.
Looks good. Molly, of course, going to be talking about some CSS solutions and best practices, and Derek Featherstone's going to talk about designing for accessibility in emerging technologies. And
very cool.
Yeah, it looks good. So check that out. Of course, the links to all these will be on the WebAx post for this podcast. And one more. Let's see. Accessibility in Technical Communication and the Workplace, June 13th, 14th in Churchill College in Cambridge, England.
It'll be a fun one to go to. Just be nice to get around England.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't been there for a while. You know, I went.
Yeah.
No, I went six times.
Really?
Yeah. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
When I was living in Orlando, when I was doing web-based training, yeah, we had two projects for the government, the UK government, and so for each project, I flew out there three times.
Wow!
So over a period of like a year and a half, I went six times. Yeah, it was really cool. Very cool.
Did you get to have a chance for to have fun while doing it, or was it kind of like a work, like live in a hotel sort of thing?
It was mostly work, but I did have a chance. You know, I had one day go around London, and let's see, I was in Birmingham. You know, I got to check out that city a little bit. I had one other extra day. I went to a castle and stuff.
That's cool.
Went to a castle. Yeah, it was pretty cool. You know, I mean, a lot of people in Europe, they're like, a castle, big deal, you know, because they're everywhere, you know, they right. see, you know, but in the United States, you don't get to see that kind of thing very often.
Yeah, much more exciting for us. We don't have anything fun like that.
Yeah. So, anyhow, okay, well, that, yeah, that one looks very promising as well. Okay, I think I'm out of breath.
Me too, and luckily that's also all that we had for today.
Yeah, so thanks for listening, and join us next time.
Yep, and if any of you people who are running any of these conferences want to send Dennis and I to them, we'll be happy to podcast about them.
Yeah, and we could give a good review on your accessibility conferences.
Yes.
All right, Ross, thanks for joining again, and we'll talk to you all later.
Goodbye, everyone.
The WebAx blog and podcast is located at webaxe.blogspot.com, webaxe.blogspot.com. Email webaxe@gmail.com, webaxe@gmail.com. To leave a voice message, call 206-203-0585. WebAx is sponsored by Check Engine USA, website tune-ups and overhauls. www.checkengineusa.com.